Welcome to the Operation High Ground podcast. In these podcasts, you'll hear helpful information focused on the reintegration of our heroes returning home from active duty. Here now is Executive Director Rick Norling.
Today's guest is Tom Newman. Tom served in Vietnam with 101st Airborne Division, attached to Bravo Company, in the first of the 50 Deuce, commonly known as the First Strike. He was in country February 1968 to February 1969. February 1968, I might add, was the bloodiest year of the war. Tom is an author of two books. First book that he wrote was Things to Come, followed by his second book, Just War. We will discuss that briefly in a little bit. One of the things that we got as a takeaway from his book was a statement that Tom penned. It was called The New You. Tom, what is The New You, and how did you come to discover it?
When I went into the military, it was 30 days after graduating from high school, so I'm an 18-year-old. I'm a student of sports, sneaking a beer every now and then. You know, that's the course of my life up to that point in time. And at any point in time, we are a summation of everything we know and everything we've experienced. So that's a continual evolutionary process through our life. So I go in the military. I had to go through 7 months of training, and then I go to Vietnam, and I spend 1 year in Vietnam and have a lifetime worth of experiences. These are experiences that are at the extreme edge of the reality. I could never possibly imagine what I was going to go through, what I was going to see, what I was going to witness. You acquire a whole new range of emotions. There was one time a guy was walking down a trail and he hit a booby trap, and I ran over to him, tried to apply pressure to the wound to stop the bleeding until I could get the medic over there, and the guy died. And I have never felt so absolutely helpless or useless in my entire life. And that's a new range to the emotions, and I'll have those emotions with me for the rest of my life. Training we went through also added to my expanse of knowledge. So in acclimation of how we mature in life, experiences and new and broader information, those are all measures of the change. You know, I tell everybody that I went over to Vietnam when I was 19 and I came home 40, because that's the degree of change that I felt I went through because of those experiences. Went over there as a student, came back as a skilled warrior. How did I discover it? I think because I had different interests. I was a more serious person. I thought the people I hung around with, the stuff they did was silly. I felt like I was hanging with a bunch of 19-year-olds and I was 40. I was used to serious stuff, life and death decisions. My biggest discovery was my anger. I didn't like that. And that was the first thing that cued to me that there's a new me. Who's this angry guy? So I set about to change that.
You know, we've heard repeatedly that the veteran returning home has changed forever. Tom, why would you say that you're forever changed or our veterans are forever changed?
Because of the extreme of the experiences, the evil they've seen. They have to grapple with what people are capable of doing to other people. It's a whole new range of depths of emotions and experiences, and all of those things serve to change us. We can't undo any of it. Anyone is changed by their experiences, but these experiences are so extreme and so drastic. One of the reasons I quit watching TV is everything just seems so phony to me now. A person is changed when they go off to college. It's a different kind of experience, so it's a different kind of change, but we're all changed by what we learn and what we experience.
This changed person often has lost his or her bearings in life. PTS, or post-traumatic stress, has rewired how they interact with the family and society as a whole. Can you tell us more about that?
Rewired, I think, is the new thinking and the new way we react. It's the new me, a different person. Respond differently to family and friends. We're social creatures, and we have the sense that we don't fit in anymore. Because of the new ways we think, other people don't really empathize with what we think. Some of the new ways we think are beneficial. Some of the new ways we think are destructive. We have to sort that out. When I was in the combat zone, we used to have an expression called gut-level communication, where we would talk about, you know, you don't know if you're going to be alive the next day or not. So what you're saying is completely honest. It's your innermost thoughts, fears, hopes. It builds such a trust and such a solid relationship. That's why there's all these connotations about brothers in arms. It's because it's such a deep, trusting relationship. I can count on one hand the number of people today that I can have gut-level communications with. And when you sit down to try and talk to somebody to help sort all this out, and you take the seismograph of reality and you tell somebody something that's a 10 on the seismograph, and they want to empathize with you, of course, so they come back with something that's a 1 on the seismograph, and you say they don't get it. why do I even bother?
The gut level communication. You mentioned that a couple of times in your book at Just War. I would invite the listener to be able to go to our website at operationhighground.org, and Tom's contact information will be on that site. Tom, how do the returning service members adapt to the new you understanding?
Well, the first thing they have to adapt to is we're social creatures, and we all have a perception of ourselves within our culture. The guys that came back from Vietnam, there was a cultural perception of an immoral war, war protesters, making you think that the war was wrong. And in actuality, we've been in Iraq and Afghanistan for 14 years. There's no war protest because we don't have a draft. The protests of the late 60s and early 70s were actually protests against the draft, the people that didn't want to go to war. So what we have to look at is the culture has this perception of an immoral war. We've got a perception of the honor, the bravery, and the heroism that was displayed by all of our brothers. And some people are just lazy thinkers. They don't do the research, so they just mimic what the media has told them. And if you're going to sit down with somebody and you have that obstacle to overcome in communication, that you got to start way back there, you're not even going to bother. When I wrote Just War, one of the things I said is somebody had to tell the truth about the Vietnam War, and Just War is that truth. By the time we put combat troops on the ground in Vietnam, we were honoring five treaties that we had signed. And what does it mean for it to be a just war? It means that we didn't take a life unjustly. Our brothers didn't die in vain. Our cause was just. There was meaning and significance to what we did.
You know, that's one of those things that just kind of takes your breath away to hear that and to understand fully. You're right. So many people just become lazy thinkers. That's true. And I think to some degree, we're all guilty of that, where we don't take the time to dig. In talking about the new you, again, that's a new phrase that a lot of people aren't familiar with. And I realize that it's yours. How can you give us more definition on that? How do people adapt back into society? And how does that new you apply to the returning service members? And how can we as a society understand that more so we can properly help them at a positive level?
Well, first they have to acknowledge that they're drastically changed by their experiences. It's hard to figure this stuff out, especially when there's no one to talk to. And because it's so hard, many people think it's easier just to take a drink and forget about it, to try to act normal, which of course is a self-betrayal. And that gives a person a sense of resentment, which leads to anger, rebellion. If they can't figure it out, they're going to stay in this wilderness. We had a guy that, when we were going through first aid training, he was terrified of the thought of a sucking chest wound. And that's when your lung is perforated and your breathing is through the hole in your lung instead of your larynx and your trachea. And so it's bubbling and it's gurgling and, you know, it just really sounds awful. Well, he got hit with shrapnel in the chest. He had a sucking chest wound, and we told him it wasn't, and he would look fine, get to go back to the States for recovery. So we were trying to keep him pumped up and not let him know what was happening. The new medic that came over to address it called for the medevac and said, I've got a guy down. I need the medevac right now. And they said, we're really busy. We can't come to you. And he said, I've got a sucking chest wound. I need a helicopter now. And after hearing that, within seconds, the guy was dead. And it's when I go to the VA and I see all these guys walking around with their Vietnam veteran hats, and they all look 20 years older than I do. It's because they're still in that wilderness. They haven't gotten their way out. They haven't identified the new you and how to adapt that new you to their environment they're in now. It all comes down to communications in so many instances.
So the new you, in your opinion, then, would be we're forever changed by whatever life throws at us, whether it's civilian or military, we're changed forever. But specifically with service members, the new you is a real powerful new way to look at things, if you will.
Yeah, experiences and knowledge continue our process of maturation. But when you go through events that are extremely drastic, they make a huge impact. It's like a woman that's been raped. That is going to affect her for the rest of her life. And the one thing about combat is it's not a one-time incident. It's day after day after day. For me, it was 278 days in a row. Hugely impactful.
I could give the statistics, but would you give the statistics of what the 5 O'Deuce experienced?
In the year I was with the O'Deuce in 1968, we had 97% casualties and fatalities.
You got to just stop for a minute and just think of that number, 97% casualties. That means 3% made it back. And those 3% that made it back is truly a new you. And we can use that to adapt, to be able to share a story that we can help so many others. Women vets are coming home with not only post-traumatic stress, but with also a new term called military sexual trauma, or MST. Tom, what is that, and could you describe it to us?
Well, it's sexual harassment. It's intimidation. It's rape. It's discrimination. There's a Major General Robert Shadley who is commissioned to look into it, and this was pretty recently, and he wrote a book about it. It's called The Game. And what he discovered is that there were a bunch of cadre that when they had these 18, 19-year-old women come through their training, they would put performance pressure on them to go to bed with them in order for them to graduate, to get promoted. You know, when you're in the military, it's not like you can go to HR. If you go and try and turn this into the CO, it could jeopardize your career. You could be labeled a troublemaker. And if you went into the military, you're obviously going in looking to make it a career. So there's just too much pressure on these people for performance, stability in their career, and there's too many people that take advantage of it. You know, I think a part of that is also the cultural morality of our declining culture. You know, in Vietnam, I think it was said that they were told you have to be a lady first and a soldier second. And what happens today is if you think you can qualify to be in the military, you better be a soldier. So you better belly up and do everything the guys are doing.
Boy, that's powerful. In the military and looking at that, now the number of active duty women in the military has jumped substantially over the last, I would say, 10 years, if I'm not mistaken. You know, with military service down, certainly all of our soldiers, unlike Vietnam, currently all our soldiers right now are enlisted people. They volunteered to do this and they weren't drafted. So we've got a whole different way of looking at this. Women have certainly volunteered to broaden their career, to go further, and now they're dealing with this issue of this MST. Why hasn't the military been bringing out the statistics for sexual trauma before now?
Well, number one, I don't think they knew to look for it. When I was in the service, which was 67 to 70, 3% of the people in uniform were female. Today, with the all-volunteer army, that's 15%. So the initial cover-up can't be buried now. There's too many occurrences, it's too big of a population, and it's probably the same ratio. It's just with the bigger population, there's more of it occurring, so more of it's going to be found out about. I think people are a little more bold in coming forward with this. You start to get some females that become senior-ranking officers. Now there's someone they can go talk to. And there's somebody that'll carry the flag for them. One in five women suffer from MST. It's just now starting to surface, and we don't know if it's the tip of the iceberg or if we've got the whole thing yet.
Some of the statistics, Tom, show that women are six times more likely than their male counterparts to commit suicide. In dealing with that military statistic from the Department of Defense claiming that 22 a day commit suicide, and again, the women by numbers at a percentage rate opposed to the men six times more likely. Percentage-wise, it's a much higher number, certainly not by numbers, but has anything been done to possibly link that stress that they're dealing with to the multiple sexual trauma issue, do you think? Again, this is something that we don't know, but this is all assumption.
Well, it started with females showing symptoms for post-traumatic stress, and they started to identify aspects of it that were different than males with post-traumatic stress. So they set a separate category to identify this is unique to females, it's unique to gender, it's unique to the position they play in a basically an all-male organization. So it warranted its own name for special treatment and special considerations.
I want to go back to the new you for a second, and I'm by no means minimizing the MST, but the new you is again a key word that I think is going to probably be on the lips of most people around the country as this develops and this new understanding of these issues start to develop. But how can we prepare for the new you in returning vets?
Well, it should be part of their training. Before they're deployed, be made aware of it. After they come back, they should return. In fact, it's funny you should ask that, Rick, because the program Operation High Ground would be an excellent before and after deployment series for soldiers to go through so they know what's there, they know what they're going to come back to, and know what to prepare their spouse for while they're gone.
You mentioned passing the baton or the video series that we're doing, and part of our deliverance is going to be through the church or the area where we're going to distribute this. For those who happen to be ministering to families and to veterans, how do you minister to the new you of the returning service members?
Well, PTS is very idiosyncratic and it's situational specific, so it's never going to be one cure that fits all. I think the best way I can answer that is what worked for me. I was raised a Lutheran. I was confirmed, went to the confirmation classes. I was given a Bible when I was 10 years old. I had read the Bible by the time I went in the military. So I had a God awareness when I got to the war. And there were 26 times that I should have been killed or at least severely wounded. And I started off thinking that it was luck and that I was a very good soldier. And then some very extraordinary events happened, and it led me to believe that this isn't luck, this isn't my soldiering, this is God's intervention. One of the situations was I had walked down a path heading towards a river. The guy on the other side of the hedgerow hit a booby trap. He went down. I was there helping him. And the medic came over, and he said, there's too much blood. I can't see what's going on. And I said, there's a rain barrel right by the corner of that house up there. Grab these helmets. Go back up this trail. I just came down it. So the guy grabbed the helmets, went up the trail, got halfway up, hit a booby trap, and blew both his legs off. And there's absolutely no explanation I can give as to how he tripped it and I did not. Another time we'd come across an area where we got ambushed and fired it at the ambush site and took out the two machine guns. When we went around the hedgerow, there was a plot of trees. Thought, well, maybe some people escaped and they're in the trees. Let's take a look at that. We walked through it. We didn't find anybody in it, so we figured, well, there's got to be underground tunnels. So we called in the F-4s to come and bomb it with 500-pound bombs, and the CO pulled the company back and put the three-point men around the wooded area. My axis was on the long end, and the F-4s came in, dropped their bombs, and one of the bombs bounced out of the woods and came tumbling at me end over end. I knew I couldn't run fast enough in the mud of the rice paddy to get away, so I just watched it land 15 feet in front of me and not explode. And as soon as I looked at that bomb, I said, okay, I get it. This has got nothing to do with me. It's all in your hands. You're in control of all of this. And I guess the other thing I think gave me an edge up on trying to deal with all of this is one time we were going into a village. We came in on whisper mode in our choppers over the South China Sea and sat down on the beach. And we were waiting for daylight to advance on the village. And as we moved in, the trooper next to me hit a wasp nest with the butt of his rifle. And the wasp swarmed on me, stinging me 11 times in the head and the neck. And I was in so much pain, I just sat down, and the medic came over. He saw the bees and knew what was going on. He went to the CO and said, we got a medevac, Newman. And he said, I can't bring in a chopper now. It'll give our position away. So as soon as they engaged the village, the chopper came in, brought me to the MASH unit, LZ Sally. And when they wheeled me in the emergency room, I had no facial feature. I was so swollen up. And the doctor looked at me and said, what in the hell happened to him? I don't think he knew how to treat me. But as soon as he said that, I realized a wasp had stung me in the mouth, and I reached in my mouth and I took it out and held it up, and then I flatlined. I went into anaphylactic shock, suffered cardiac arrest, and complete respiratory failure. As soon as that happened, my spirit and my soul left my body, and I went up above the operating room and watched the procedures to resuscitate me. So the next day, I'm laying in the recovery room, and I'm finally coming out of this, and I'm trying to get my head around this. I just lived outside my body. We really don't need this thing. But I'm kind of looking for empirical evidence. I've got to convince myself that it wasn't effective drugs, that I wasn't in shock. You know, what was it? And about that time, the orderly was coming by, and he says, I see you're coming around. How are you feeling? I said, well, I got a question for you. Why are you guys putting blood in one arm and taking it out of the other arm? Very surprised look on his face. He looked at me and said, how the hell do you know we did that? You were gone. So the takeaway I have as the new me is this understanding that there are two distinct realities. The one that we live in, our 3D touch and feel reality, I always refer to as provisional reality. The other one, God and his celestial beings, the non-material reality, I call foundational reality. And when I was looking at those people in the operating room, I was thinking, I can see them, why can't they see me? I looked at my hand and I could see through it. It was translucent, and you can't see something if it doesn't reflect light. So I came away with that these two realities are overlapping. We live in both of them right now because we're both physical and spiritual beings. And that was the real realization for the new me, is a new understanding of my eternal nature and that this is just a temporary stepping off point for now.
This is a new way that we have to look at things, and certainly regarding our service members as they come home. Go to our website at operationhighground.org and you'll be able to get the contact information. What Tom was talking about was the book that he wrote, Just War, and tells his experiences in Vietnam. In fact, the wasps and the other story about the point are all in there, and it's something that you need to read because his experiences will help you understand so much of what someone goes through when they serve our country and come back and try to readapt into society. The other book that he has written is called Things to Come. Actually, it was the first book that Tom wrote, followed by Just War. But Just War is a real caveat to Things to Come to help you understand it. And it's really a brief history of the Bible, and it shows how Tom went through his healing and what he went through and endured to be able to come back and walk a whole life after most people would not be able to put it all together. Tom has used his experiences to help our service members and to help us understand what our responsibility and our roles are. Tom, at the end of the day, what's your biggest takeaway and what did you learn the most that you'd be willing to share that would help someone understand either that's coming back or somebody that's sitting here receiving somebody who's coming back into society?
You know, an expression that was always used in Vietnam is, and I guess it was a way for people to try to deal with it, it don't mean nothing. And it used to just infuriate me when people said that because everything means something. And the one thing that I held on that got me through all of my experiences was that God wouldn't be putting me through this if he didn't have a reason. You know, Ephesians 2:10 talks about before we're born, beforehand were given good works that we're supposed to do. And I looked at my experiences as the equipping and training for whatever that whatever those good works are. I don't know if I've done them or if I haven't done them yet. I don't know if we do them in this reality or the next. But I looked at my experience as training and equipping for that, and I didn't look at it as a club from my past to beat myself up with it all the time. We basically have two choices. We can understand that we came out of that experience as a warrior, or we came out as a victim.
Operation High Ground is a nonprofit organization that needs financial support to continue to grow and serve. If you would like to support us, you can reach us at operationhighground.org, or you can email us at info@operationhighground.org. Operation High Ground is committed to the continued support of our veterans and their families. Thank you for your interest and support of this program.